Thank you. My name's Alison, I'm an addict, and thank you, Natasha, for asking me to share. And sorry to have got you in a bit of a panic. I've gone across London, north to south, and I got in about 15 minutes ago, soaking wet. Just managed to throw all the stuff in the sink, just in case you think I'm unmanageable around my housework, and made a cup of tea and sat down. So I'm still in my work clothes and feeling a bit. Actually, I was thinking, you know what, years ago, if I'd have been late or couldn't do a chair, I'd have thought, you know, people were going to relapse and, you know, nobody would be able to take over. Whereas now I know that anybody could have stepped in. The meeting would have gone ahead without me. So it wasn't that big a drama. So, but I know, you know, especially, you know, I'm a chair finder for a meeting. And when people are not where they're supposed to be at 7 o'clock, I'm thinking, oh, you know, and it's kind of easier when it's present. You can kind of sneakily go up to somebody and say, would you mind stepping in, where it's a bit harder when it's on Zoom. So apologies for my unmanageability. So, yeah, I'm really glad to be here. I'm also glad that it isn't the size of the actual Trafalgar meeting. You know, when I came into recovery, and I came into recovery 20 years ago this week, I was still using, and, you know, I was using for about a month. And I remember, you know, hearing people and watching people share, and my ego kind of went, oh, I'd love to be able to do that, get up almost like on stage and, you know, share my experience, strength and hope. And then for a few years, I did love it. And I was most insulted if I didn't get asked to share at, you know, the bigger meetings and stuff. And now I really hate it. You know, I like to be as anonymous inside this fellowship as I do outside of the fellowship. I kind of stick to local meetings and, yeah, keep it on the download, you know, quite a lot. So, but if I'm asked to share, I will share. If it's possible. I'm not one of these people who think, oh, if I'm asked to do something, I never say no. One of the joys, you know, I never said no in my recovery, you know. So actually, my life got very unmanageable when I was always saying yes to things. So I can say no today, and I'm okay with that. I know other people never say no, but I do. So yeah, I came into this fellowship. I was 39 years old and I felt about 100. I was exhausted. You know, I couldn't imagine doing the next 20 years, the next 30 years going on how I'd gone on. You know, I was just really, I was in a huge amount of debt. I was in like 20 grand's worth of debt. I had to sell a property because I owed so much money on the mortgage. I had very few friends. The friends I had, I really didn't like. They were just people who used like I did. And I'm sure they didn't like me very much. I certainly didn't like myself, you know. I'd had a few, you know, I always say I had, you know, several one-night stands that ended up going on for years and years and years, you know. It was like I was all right getting into relationships. I just couldn't get out of the things, you know. They were using relationships. Usually it wasn't, oh, I was madly in love, although I'd pretend I was. There was usually a payoff, you know. There was some kind of, you know, either he had a flat or I had a flat and he had nowhere to live, you know, or he was a dealer or something like that. So all my relationships were very based on what I could get or what I could give, you know. And by the end of my using, I haven't had a relationship for years because it was almost like that was the first thing that I realized I was so unmanageable around. And then, of course, the drugs took on more of a significance because they kind of, you know, I had a relationship with drugs. You know, it was like when I came into recovery, it was like the most reliable relationship I'd ever had. I knew what it said on the tin was going to happen. And it was awful, you know, or the thought of giving up was really awful, you know. And I'd kind of made several attempts to stop using, you know, they say about medicine, religion and psychiatry. I was very into doing spiritual things. I was always off, you know, doing some mad kind of, you know, thing that I thought was going to cure me. And about this time last year, I went away to a festival, and I was doing site crew on the festival, and it was a druid thing, it was a druid festival, and it was like no drink and no drugs. And I thought if I went somewhere where there was no drink and no drugs, I'd be able to stop using. And what happened, I just ended up in a total mess. I met this guy, and again, usual thing, met him, thought I was going to get married, have children, we were going to live happily ever after. And it turned out he was actually in recovery. He was 11 years sober, and we ended up spending the whole night talking about recovery. And for me, it was the first time, you know, that real level of intimacy that I've never had with anybody else. He was talking about how I felt. He was saying things that I just never thought I'd say to anybody or ever hear anybody else say to me. And it was amazing. And I promised him, he was from Bath, and I promised him when I came back to London that I would go to meetings. And I kept that promise, you know, I kept that promise. I went to meetings. I remember I went to my first meeting. I was working at that time. I was temping. I was a legal secretary. So I turned up at a meeting looking like I was going to a meeting, you know, in a suit with my notepad and pencil ready to take notes, and felt a bit stupid. You know, I know nowadays on Zoom, loads of people take notes, but it was never done in live meetings. So, I just, you know, I always remember the first guy I heard, he was called Steve. He was 128 days clean. Even now, I could tell you his story 20 years later because it had such a profound effect on me. And that paranoia, I was hugely paranoid. And it was almost like this guy's been following me around and he's talking about me, you know, and because obviously it was all about me, obviously. And I was just, yeah, I just loved it. I loved the, you know, I was interested in other people, their stories, things like that. You know, they said 90 meetings in 90 days and get a sponsor. And I was convinced if I did 90 meetings in 90 days, got a sponsor, people would tell me how to stop using. In fact, I didn't even want to stop. What I wanted was to be able to be a social user again. And I remember saying to somebody, well, I don't have a problem with drink, so, you know, I'll still drink. And he said, well, if you don't have a problem with it, you won't need to do it, will you? And I was like, oh, okay. Because quite often my attempts of stopping using by myself had been, I'd stop taking drugs and start drinking really heavily. And I was somebody who didn't have a problem with drugs, drink. So, so I came into the fellowship and I set a day to stop using. And it's actually the 21st of June, which was at the time, it's the summer solstice. At the time, that was kind of a big kind of spiritual day for me. And the night before, I was at a meeting which no longer exists. It was a Wednesday night. There was somebody, you know, I had stuff in my car I was going to use up until midnight, you know. I was probably the first 3 or 4 days clean, I was still probably off my tits, do you know what I mean? So, you know, I didn't actually drink anything, but it was still probably in my system. And I went to the meeting and there was a girl there who didn't take the same drugs as I took. She didn't speak like I did. I was still very much in that very, you know, DMs, black, you know, and she was like what I'd call a trainer girl. You know, she was one of those people who had 90 trainers in 90 days. And nothing in common. I didn't like her. And I thought, well, what is this girl going to tell me about anything? And, you know, what I heard from her that day was, and I'm still thinking, how the hell, I want to stop tomorrow. How the hell am I going to stop? How am I going to do this? I've been coming to meetings probably for about 30 days and I don't know how to stop. And, you know, she just said, you know, you just don't pick up. You don't smoke anything. You don't snort anything. You don't drink anything. And I know that's obvious, but it was like a bolt of lightning. Oh my God, I just don't pick up. And that's how I stop using. Absolute revelation, you know. And she said, you know, and you just do it for one day. And don't worry about your birthday when you're 40. You know, I had this big idea that at 40 I was going to be, you know, champagne and Charlie again, you know, and that wasn't the case. I didn't have enough friends to have a party. Do you know what I mean? So just for today. So I did it just for today. You know, I started my steps pretty early. I went through the green and gold. I couldn't sleep like a lot of people. I couldn't sleep at night. So I just used to do my step work. And that's what I did. I did a meeting every day for probably 2 or 3 years. You know, when I came into recovery, I was quite psychotic with all the drugs. And, you know, I couldn't even watch an episode of EastEnders and find out what was going on. It was too complicated, you know. And for the first probably 6 months, I ate cheese and pickle sandwiches because I knew I liked cheese and pickle sandwiches. And I was too fearful to even think about what else I might like, you know, because, again, my sense of taste was really off. And it took me about 14 years to get my sense of any sort of smell back. I couldn't smell anything. I didn't know why they called skunk skunk until one day I got my nose back and then realised it's because it absolutely stinks, you know. So things like that took me quite a long time, you know, just to be able to start. You know, I don't know what I thought would happen if I chose the wrong meal to eat, but it really frightened me, you know, to think I might make a mistake in what I may or may not like. So, so I did meetings probably nearly for 5 years, most days, because, yeah, I still didn't really know what I was doing a lot of the time. I didn't have any interests. I didn't, you know, have a relationship. So I was quite bored on my own. I still didn't really enjoy my own company. You know, I was very much a workaholic as well. So I put a lot of my focus onto work. You know, if I was good at my job, then I was okay. For the first, you know, and I think for me, things have really changed. I mean, in this lockdown, I worked through lockdown. I worked for the NHS. So I was working all through it and it was very, very stressful. I really didn't like the Zoom meetings to start off with. So my focus really changed in, you know, from doing meetings and step work, you know, working with people doing service in meetings. And it really, I've always tried to be one of those people who reads my Just for Today every day and do spiritual texts, but it's never become a habit for me. You know, I never wake up and think, oh, I must read my Just for Today, or I must do what I need to do. But during this lockdown, I got COVID. I also was off work with anxiety. It was really stressful at work. So I had a lot of time. In 20 years, I've never had any time off work, really. So I had this real thing of just being me and not being a doing person. I just had to really relax and really do nothing. And there was really nothing to do. I've been a real spiritual seeker on my journey. You know, I've gone on yoga retreats. I've done Buddhist meditations. I go to India quite a lot. So I've been to India to become a yoga teacher. I've done a Kundalini, which is a Sikh form of yoga, and done all that meditation. So I've done a lot of that stuff. And, you know, during the day, I didn't actually know I had COVID, but the day when I started to come down with the symptoms, I had a real kind of quite profound spiritual experience of really feeling that I was being looked after. And I hadn't really, and I always envy people when they say that, oh, I've really got that conscious contact with God. I'd searched for it for 20 years and never had it. And since then, you know, I was a bit anti-Christian, really. And I read my Bible every day, and I get up and I read my Bible, you know, and I love it. And also the Just for Today. And, you know, some days I wake up and I think, what's the point? Because I never remember it. And I remember, and somebody said, you know, well, you eat breakfast every day, but you don't always remember what breakfast you've had. But you're nourishing yourself by eating breakfast. And just by having that 10 minutes in the morning, I'm nourishing myself. Just even if I don't know, at the end of the day, I couldn't tell you what I've read. So, you know, I that's what my focus has been. A lot of my, I've really, you know, me and my husband, we've been together 11 years. We got married 2 years ago. We spent half our marriage in lockdown. We spent more time together. We're very independent. He's in recovery as well, but he's always done his meetings. I've always done mine. He's got his hobbies. I've got mine. We've got our friends. So this year we've really spent a lot of really good quality time together, which has been really lovely. And we've really become a lot closer. You know, we kind of joked that I've realized that he's as mad as cheese. Do you know what I mean? And he said, well, for the first 10 years, you were so self-obsessed, you only thought about yourself. So, you know, all of a sudden, obviously I've grown, I'm not so self-obsessed. So yeah, don't worry if you're dating anybody, don't worry about what's going on in your head. Keep your eyes on what they're about. But no, he's brilliant. We've had such a laugh in lockdown. We've had wonderful times. We've eaten really nice meals. It's been lovely. And we've just got a kitten, which has been brilliant. I didn't think I was a cat person, but I'm absolutely in love with this new kitten, even though she decided to sit on my house plant today and sleep on it. So, you know, I've been in recovery a long time. It's been a real up and down journey. I've lost, you know, but I think the biggest thing for me probably has been, if you're new around, we all think we're going to get this, and then when our friends relapse, it is the most one of the most devastating things for me, and has been in early recovery, was when somebody relapsed. It was terrifying. I've had people die in recovery. I've lost jobs in recovery. I've been homeless in recovery. So it hasn't all been great, but I haven't picked up in that time. You know, good things, I've travelled extensively, which I've loved. I've got a lovely home, you know, and it's nothing flash. My husband actually, you know, through being in rehab for 3 years and second stage house, he got housed. So we just live in a small flat, but it's the first home where I just come home and I don't dread walking through the door. What is going to happen when I walk through that door? I know that I'm going to come home to a cup of tea, a kiss, a cuddle, and it's going to be lovely. You know, I've got lovely friends, you know, and for me, when I hear, and I think for a lot of people, when I hear people talk about friendships in recovery, I didn't have that, oh, I love everybody and I've got loads and loads and loads of friends. Because I don't think it's natural for friendships to be instant. To, you know, friendship comes over traveling this journey together, you know. The friends I have, I've known, you know, 16 years now, and we've been through all the stuff I've just talked about. We know each other really well, our bad points, our good points, you know. And I love my friends. I'm so grateful for them. My family are a bit tricky. There's still a lot of using and dysfunction, but I try and support them, sometimes a bit financially. You know, I listen to them. I try not to give them any suggestions. I certainly don't try to get them into recovery, because that just sends them to another level. But, you know, most of all, I like, you know, I'm really at peace with myself. I feel really, you know, for a long time, I was very ambitious and wanted to, you know, set the world alight. I work in the NHS. I've never gone up the ladder because I love that face-to-face working with people. You know, I earn a decent wage, but I'm not rich. You know, I've got savings. I love what I do. I love my friends. I love my hobbies. You know, I'm so blessed to have my husband's, you know, we're still in love in 11 years, you know. And when I met him, we met after the Brixton meeting. And for the first time in my life, I had a conversation with a man and just thought that was a lovely conversation. What a nice guy. And thought nothing of it. I didn't think I was going to get married. I didn't think we were going to end up together. I just thought he's a lovely person. And we ended up dating and we've been together ever since, you know. So the last thing I'll say is we never know. I wanted to rush everything when I came into recovery. I wanted to try and get everything back that I'd lost. And that didn't happen. I did a bit of a false start. I got a new career and I hated it, but it would have earned me lots of money. I then had to retrain. You know, I met my husband when I was 49. I got married when I was 58. You know, I went to university when I was 48, you know, or I graduated when I was 48. So all of these things are possible, but not in our time. You know, it isn't a race. This is a marathon. This is a marathon. So please pace yourself. Don't compare yourself to anybody else. And, you know, just enjoy being in recovery because it's brilliant. So thank you very much.